Thank you, Luke, for doing those readings and for including that song, which I particularly love. When I invite people to come as guests to MHCC who don't already know us, one of the things I often say is that we as a people share an understanding that God speaks to us through the sacred text of our lives. And recently I invited you to share some of how God speaks to you through the sacred text of your life, possibly through the framing of how your life has influenced the way you experience and understand Jesus. But generally, I don't stand up here and share the sacred text of my life. So today, I'm going to do that. I'm a little bit more nervous than I usually am when I get up to speak today. Because I thought if I'm going to ask you to do that, I need to ask myself those questions and be prepared to share what I find. So, something of my life and how it shaped my Jesus. So my parents are Nerida and Ray, and they grew up in farming communities in Western Victoria. I had to look this up, but they grew up on Jadwajali land. Both were from families who had come as German migrants in the 1850s to Victoria, some to Melbourne and some to farms. Mum trained as a teacher. Dad eventually sold the family farm. He was a farmer, and then he put himself through seminary to become a Lutheran pastor. And that was just before they were married, which will be 50 years ago in February. And I was born the third child of our family on Watarong land at Ballarat. And we moved to Noongar country when I was 4. I grew up in the Lutheran manse next door to the Lutheran church in Morley, where my dad was a pastor. I grew up across the road, physically across the road from the Lutheran, government primary school that myself and my 4 siblings all attended. We were a very intellectual family in a working class neighbourhood. And the parish that I grew up in was largely comprised of people who'd come after World War II as displaced persons from Europe, and their children and their grandchildren who were my generation. And it was a very family-oriented place. I had a safe, loved, happy childhood. God was an integral part of who our family was, but not particularly personal. Through my teens and into my 20s, I was really heavily involved with the Lutheran Youth of Western Australia, which is LIWA. It was always LIWA to us. And LIWA was my core social network. It was far more important to me than my school friends. It was a place that I felt I belonged, and I didn't feel like I belonged at school. And I was very good at school. I didn't like it. And LIWA was full of people who were very rigorous thinkers, particularly in the leadership, and we spent many, many happy late evenings at camps pulling ideas apart together. And I joined that leadership team. I was involved in leadership with LIWA for over 10 years, which if you do the math, meant I started in that quite young. It was, as Lutherans tend to be, very intellectual. German theology, Lutheran German theology, can be very, very thinky. And that was the culture we were in. And it was a lot of fun. During my first year at uni, I also started attending what was then Rhema, which is now Riverview, because I wanted to go to a church where nobody knew me. And I also wanted to go somewhere where people were passionate. I was also part that year of a regular LIWA worship service where the musicians were heavily influenced by Eddie Van Halen. And although that didn't brew in me a love for Eddie Van Halen, I do now appreciate guitar solos. But it opened something up in me. And I wrote in my journal at the time something to the effect that I'd always felt like Jesus was a nice man in a grey suit sitting in the front row waiting for me to come into church and meet with him. And I went to these services where the music was outrageous, and I felt like Jesus was a barefoot, scruffy someone who would come running out the door to greet me in a big, boisterous hug. So this is a very happy picture, and I don't want to undercut that. I had a happy, lovely upbringing, and I'm very, very grateful for it. One of the threads through my upbringing as a teenager, though, was an ever-present fear that it would all fall apart, and particularly that we would suddenly leave Perth. At the time, things are a little different now, I understand, in the Lutheran Church, but at the time, the Lutheran Church Australia New Zealand is one body, and if you were a Lutheran parish in that church and you didn't have a pastor and you wanted a pastor, you would gather as a congregation and look at all the pastors who were available for call, which was basically every pastor in Australia and New Zealand who had been at their present post less than about two or three years. Sorry, more than two or three years. And the congregation would then vote and they would send a call, which meant the nominated congregational person would ring up said pastor who they'd chosen off the list and say, would you like to come and be our pastor? You've got about 3 or 4 weeks to decide. And these would come out of the blue. They were often from places that were remote or rural, because Lutheran Church Australia wide is a very rural church. And I was terrified that we would go. It was kind of the thing that Lutheran pastors stayed in a parish for 5 to 7 years, generally. Well, we'd been at Morley longer than that when I hit high school. So I knew we were on the list. I knew that when the district leaders in other districts went to parishes who had no idea who was who in Australia, that my dad's name was on their list. And periodically, the call would come. And it would always be on a Sunday night, because churches meet on Sundays and that'd be when someone... So I used to go to youth things on a Sunday afternoon with this fear that when I got home, it would all be waiting to fall apart. I prepared this and I thought, no, this is all in the past. So when I was 18, the thing I feared came to pass. I came home and we had a call and my parents decided to go to Narra Court in South Australia, population 5,000, about 3.5 hours drive from Adelaide. And I was not going with, because I'd just finished 1 year of university. I had a social network here. I wasn't going to go to Adelaide and I wasn't going to go to Narra Court. And within about 3 months of that coming out of the blue, essentially, my mum and my dad and my two younger sisters had left. My older brother and sister already lived away from Western Australia by that time. My sister was lost in South America at that time, but that's a whole other story. And I stayed. And for the first 6 months-ish, I lived in the big empty manse that had been my family home with about 2 rooms of furniture. That's probably pushing it, really, 1 room of furniture spread over 2 rooms. Quite lost my spot. Where am I on here? I stopped going to Rhema and I went back to the Morley Lutheran Church that had raised me and they cared for me as one of their own. And then I joined a Christian youth ministry program in America and I spent a whole year travelling in a bus with 5 Americans being a Christian music band, singing about Jesus and hanging out with teenagers at churches. And I spent that year desperately homesick for a home that actually didn't exist. And it's only many years later as I've worked with that that I've recognised that that homesickness that I felt like was a homesickness for Australia was the manifestation of my grief at losing my childhood home. And that desire for home and my experience of music and welcome having shaken the grey suit off Jesus together infused the Jesus that I shared. I wanted those young people I spent time with to know that Jesus liked them. And I wanted them to feel that coming to Jesus was a coming home, because Jesus felt like the only home that I had. So this was a culture of favourite Bible verses. And my favourite was Matthew 11:28-30, which Luke read for us. Come to me, all of you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke on you and learn from you. Learn from me. I am gentle and humble in heart. You will find rest for your souls. My yoke is easy and my burden is light. And really, that is still the best three-line summary of who Jesus is for me. A resting place, a gentle, humble head of the household, a shared reason for being. For me, that is home. Mixed in all along and gradually growing with my happy Lutheran intellectualism was a sense that God is actually a God of the poor. And this was getting missed in the cultures that I was part of. When I was back at Perth and I was back at uni, finishing my history degree, I eventually found my way into the student Christian movement, whose tagline was, still is, open, active, ecumenical, critical. And here I found people who thought faith should lead to political action and social engagement. And within a year, I was living in a household full of SCMers. Wow. I stayed there for 6 years, and probably that stability says something about my ongoing yearning for a home. We joined protests, we wrote letters, we dialogued endlessly about living in Christian community. We opened our home to visitors. The Tuesday night dinner that is at our house now, Tyson and I's home, is an evolution of Tuesday night dinners in that household that I've been doing Tuesday night dinners for 20 years more. I don't think Tuesday nights were always on Tuesdays, but yeah. We reeled in shock together when my housemate found our neighbour hanging from a tree in the backyard next door. We got involved with the Christian Centre for Social Action with Peter and Maria Stewart in Eastvik Park, which was literally two blocks at the end of the street we lived on. We supported a self-harming teenager who came to me through my LIWA camps. We ate together, we prayed together, and we laughed a lot. And so here for me it was another part of this Matthew passage. The yoke that is easy and the burden that is light. Now this is from Matthew. Matthew is the same place that we have the Sermon on the Mount. And it is a complete paradox that you can say, love your enemies and blessed are the peacemakers and my yoke is easy. Because when I read those things, that feels like a heavy obligation and a really hard thing to do with my life. And I cannot give you an intellectual answer to that paradox. But I know that when I lived in the SCM house in Eastvik Park and we poured ourselves into trying to live that out, I have never felt so light about that way of life and about that burden and yoke. I've never felt so light about living out the hard bits of the gospel as when we were actually doing it together from a space that felt something like a home for me. It was the most wonderful time. I also learnt the hard way that I needed to have better boundaries around my time, around my emotional engagement. I got completely burnt out pouring myself into LIWA leadership. I was the state leader of the Lutheran Youth of Western Australia for quite some time, which is a volunteer role that I was doing while also working and doing a million other things, and being involved in my Lutheran parish and. And I reached a point where my whole sense of self was tied up with what I did. And I realised I didn't know who I was if I stopped doing. So this is an expose of my character. I thought, well, I better stop doing and find out then. So I did. I left the Lutheran parish that had raised me. They were good, kind, faithful people, and they still are, but I didn't fit there. I was also nursing a broken heart, but that's a story I'm not telling you about. I spent a whole year attending a different church every Sunday because I didn't want to find a new home. I wanted to find my home in God. I didn't want a home that was tied up with people or with place. And about 6 months into that, I visited here. And it was the first place in that year that I stayed for morning tea. I think even then I instinctively felt that morning tea was not something we did after worship, but was part of worship here. I didn't come back for quite some time. And even then I remained tentative for a long time. I continued attending a Lutheran church on Saturday nights until about 6 weeks before Eden was born. Eden, my second child. Where I played the piano for the Lutherans on Saturday nights for up until Eden was born. You probably didn't know I was doing that on Saturday nights. Where am I up to? I came into MHCC here as a long-time single person. I'd been single right through my 20s. And I was looking at the possibility in my late 20s that I might be always single and wrestling with, did I want that and how did that sit with me? And MHCC offered me a place where I could be part of a family even if I was on my own. Grace Maley, God bless her, who was about 9, chose me as her special person. I don't know if you remember, she used to sit on my lap every week and sit with me and make me feel at home. I came here and I found that the Jesus who said, take up my yoke of making the world a better place, had friends here. Take up my yoke and love the least of these, felt like that was something people here understood. I told SCM folks that I'd found SCM for grown-ups. I'd found a place that felt like home, and we could sing it. Music for me all my life has expressed something of who God is for me and how I express myself back to God. When I can no longer remember who I am or where I am, I will still know the lyrics to Robin Mann songs because that's who I grew up with and sang. And Robin's God is a God of mercy, a God of grace. Robin's God is a God who gives attention to people at the margins, and a God always, always revealed in Jesus. Somewhere in here, I also did a theology degree at Murdoch, and I did a graduate diploma in spiritual direction at Dayspring, and I met Tyson, and we got married midway through my theology degree. So now I'd married in and I couldn't leave you. Not that I wanted to. Now, the uni degree was a delight. I love playing with ideas, and it was wonderful, but I don't think it actually changed much about how I understood God. In lots of ways, it was a formal extension of the kind of thinking I'd been doing for a long time. The spiritual direction training took me deep into this world of contemplative spirituality. I spent a lot of time with people who felt the presence of God, especially in silence. I mostly did not. Because God is not touchy-feely and personal to me most of the time. And yet, spiritual direction did and still does feel absolutely the right thing for me to be putting myself into, which is deeply ironic because I really love being in control. And spiritual direction, in essence, is a professional discipline of letting go of control. It's a discipline of letting go of control and trusting that God will show up. Yes, the God who I don't experience personally and in a touchy-feely way, it's putting myself into a position where I trust that that God will show up. And generally that God doesn't show up for me, but I sit with other people and watch that God show up for other people while I hold a space. And it's immensely frustrating, but also wonderful and lovely, and the irony of that being where I'm called to be is a beautiful thing. Mostly. I enter into that space using the language of the other person I'm sitting with, and I find that mostly the people I sit with, it's not the language of Jesus that expresses their search for the sacred. So mostly spiritual direction for me is not about Jesus in that sense. Creating a home together with Tyson has been an experience of wholeheartedly loving and being loved. And in that, I have moved further away from theologies of Jesus that are punitive, legalistic, conditional, barren. My lived experience tells me love is not like that. I suspect that theologies of hell were largely developed by lonely men in religious communities who, with all the goodwill in the world, when searching for ways to understand the nature of God's relationship with us, didn't have the experience of being parents, didn't have the experience of loving a partner or being loved, and so drew on what they did know, which was the hierarchical relationship of a religious order. And that strongly colours our theology of God and of hell. I wonder how our whole church history would be different if it had been written by people who knew they were loved and enjoyed loving others. So some days when things are good, it is really easy to forget that the rest Jesus offers is my true home, rather than the lovely home I have with Tyson and Eden and Eva, or the home place I have here with all of you. But my old fear of losing home is never far away, which as my tears suspect, you know, there they are. It nags me every time we hear MHCC have a discussion about our future. And it pokes me almost every time Tyson backs out the driveway, the little voice in my head says, today might be the day that he doesn't make it home safely. And my steadying thought is not so much, don't be stupid, Claire, that won't happen. My steadying thought is, whatever happens, nothing will take away my home in Jesus. As I was preparing this and as I'm reading, I realise there's a lot of slippage for me between God and Jesus. And normally when I stand up here to speak, I'm very, very careful about making a distinction, not doing that slippage. I sometimes read back through my notes and check the slippage. But for me, they are enmeshed. Whether God is my home place and Jesus is the one who welcomes me into it, or whether Jesus was God and God is Jesus and therefore Jesus is my home place, in practical lived out reality, doesn't much make much difference to me. When my dear friends, who had been former SCM housemates of mine, had their third child die at 3 days old, it didn't matter if Jesus was God or not. I just knew that I was horrified that my dear, wonderful friends would suffer such an injustice. And I was unspeakably angry at whoever it was in the divine realm that would let that happen. And this promise of rest that's always been so central to me, the easy yoke, the light burden, it felt like a cruel joke because I still had my charmed life while my dear friends did not. So what sort of divine rest did I believe in? One just for lucky people? A poem I'd written myself some years earlier for the birth of some children. I write odd things. Kept coming back to haunt me, and the line that came back was, and those forsook by divine hands with wretched warning shriek, God is a fierce place to reside. And I toyed with the idea of ditching the whole faith thing altogether. I discovered that's not so easy. I have an abiding, absolute sense that God is real. And as long as I can remember, I've had that. And it's always, up until this point, it always seemed a gift because I've never had to wrestle with the existence of God. It's not a question for me if God exists. And that's not because I've worked it out myself. That's always been a gift of just having a knowing sense. I could be wrong about that. But for me, it's a deep, unquestioning knowing. But it means that I cannot avoid questions of suffering by ceasing to believe in God. Because for me, I know God is. Therefore, I must wrestle with questions of suffering within the frame of there being a God. And that's where the text from John 6 that Luke read also resonates for me. Jesus is saying some crazy shit about eating the bread of life. And then he turns to them and says, would you like to leave? Of course they want to leave. He's crazy. But Peter says, Lord, to whom would we go? You have the words of eternal life. There is nowhere else to go. And this is where I have found myself. There is nowhere else to go. So I instead had to work through what sort of God, because I have nowhere else to go but God. And what sort of God leads me to Jesus? Leads me to Jesus living amongst the marginalized, Jesus who speaks with compassion, Jesus who enters into suffering. When I have to wrestle with what sort of God, I have Jesus dying, and I somehow have people who experience Jesus alive after that death. Jesus says, this is what God is like. And here is the third piece of that Matthew text. Not just take up my yoke, but learn from me. So I keep going back to the texts where the early Christians tried to explain what it was they thought Jesus had showed them about God and about themselves. And somewhere in those messy human stories, I believe, are the clues for living now. The stories of Jesus draw me into a family and into a home. They suggest that there will be suffering and that Jesus will be right there amongst that suffering. They tell about a world that is beloved by God but oppressed by humans, that I am called to follow Jesus into and be light. These old stories lift the burden by making me part of a people sharing the yoke of following Jesus. The stories embrace me and tell me I'm welcome. So that's my Jesus. And despite my love of intellectual play, it's not an intellectual Jesus. My Jesus is an invitation to a place where I belong, where I am safe and loved. It is a place where I'm ever learning from the stories of Jesus how to be in this mucky, wonderful world. It's a place where we share together living out the way Jesus shows. And probably most importantly, my Jesus reaches in past my very together public self to the little girl inside who is always afraid it will all fall apart and says, it's okay, Claire, you'll always have a home with me. And I am happy to take questions if you would like to ask me about stuff. I'll know the answer because it's about me.
Claire, one of the readings that came up early in the piece before you started, no one comes to the Father unless the Father has enabled him. It bothers me.
Bothers me too. Because I think I see people coming to God in all sorts of ways. But within a first century Palestinian Jewish context, the language that Jesus used to explain how the people he was speaking to could know God in a new and close way was the language of the Father and the Son.
George Fox, the Quaker, spoke of that of God in every man.
Indeed, and also some women. I know. Indeed, and I agree that the spark of the divine dwells and reflects in all of us. How it got there and what name you give it, I'm not prepared to nail into a box, but I think certainly we resonate with the Creator at all times, and something in us is like a finger going around the right glass, and when we are in tune with the divine, we sing.
Just acknowledgement, Claire, that was wonderful. And so many places, my journey echoes yours. And that what struck me is we're a generation apart, but so much is what has shaped and formed you and why you're here. I could go tick, 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 tick. Thank you.